when we are not satisfied with the position God placed us and we covet someone else's job or position, we are in grave spiritual danger. We may experience physical consequences for our rebellion, maybe not in the extreme manner recorded in Numbers 16 and 17, but God does not like complainers. In this study, Richard discusses how any insight we have about our condition comes from God.
We're going to be working in the book of Numbers, and we're going to have drawn on chapter 16 and 17. They're kind of related to the same kind of scenario or same kind of approach. I told you before in the past, sometimes, many times in the book of Numbers, we don't know the exact timing, but if there is an event here, all of a sudden there's another event over here. Sometimes they are not related, sometimes they're far apart, many years apart, but these two chapters have a connection of what happens when somebody doesn't do what God had in mind, or they decide to do it anyway.
Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Datan, and Abiram, the son of Eliab, and On, the son of Pelet, the sons of Reuben, took men, and they rose up before Moshe with a number of people of Israel, 250 chiefs of the congregation, chosen from the assembly, well-known men. They assembled themselves together against Moshe and against Aharon, and said to them, "You have gone too far, for all in the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" When Moshe heard it, he fell on his face, and he said to Korah and all his company, "In the morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will bring him near to him. The one whom he chooses he will bring near to him. Do this, take censers, Korah and all his company, put them and put fire in them, and put incense on them before the Lord tomorrow. And the man whom the Lord chooses shall be the holy one. You have gone too far, sons of Levi." And Moshe said to Korah, "Hear now, you sons of Levi, is it too small a thing for you that the Lord God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself to do service in the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to minister to them? And that he has brought you near him and all your brothers, the sons of Levi, with you? And would you seek the priesthood also? Therefore, it is against the Lord that you and all your company have gathered together. What is Aharon that you grumble against him?" And Moshe sent a call, Datan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab. And they said, "We will not come up. Is it a small thing that you brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you must also make yourself a prince over us? Moreover, you have not brought us into the land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us the inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up." And Moshe was very angry and said to the Lord, "Do not respect their offering. I have not taken one donkey from them, and I have not harmed one of them." And Moshe said to Korah, "Be present, you and all your company, before the Lord, you and they, and Aharon, tomorrow. And let every one of you take a censer and put incense on it, and every one of you bring before the Lord his censer, 250 censers. You also, and Aharon, each his censer." So every man took a censer and put fire in them and laid incense on them and stood at the entrance of the tent of meeting with Moshe and Aharon. Then Korah assembled all the congregation against them at the entrance of the tent of meeting. And the glory of the Lord appeared to all the congregation. And the Lord spoke to Moshe and to Aharon, saying, "Separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment." And they fell on their faces and said, "O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin and you will be angry with all the congregation?" And the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, "Say to the congregation, get away from the dwelling of Korah, Datan, and Abiram. Then Moshe arose and went to Datan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spoke to the congregation, saying, Depart, please, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest you be swept away with all their sins. So they got away from the dwelling of Korah, Datan, and Abiram. And Datan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of their tents, together with their wives, their sons, and their little ones. And Moshe said, Hereby you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these things, and that it was not been on my own accord. If these men die as all men die, or if they are visited by the fate of all mankind, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord creates something new, and the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them, and they go down alive to Sheol, then you shall know that these men have despised the Lord. And as soon as he had finished speaking all these words, the ground under them split apart, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their households and all the people who belonged to Korah and all their goods. So they and all that belonged to them went down alive into Sheol, and the earth closed up over them, and they perished in the midst of the assembly. And all Israel who were around them fled at their cry, for they said, Lest the earth swallow us up. And fire came out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men offering the incense. Then the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, Tell Eleazar the son of Aharon the priest to take up the censers out of the blaze. Then scatter the fire afar and wide, for they have become holy. As the censers of these men who have sinned at the cost of their lives, let them be made into hammered plates as a covering for the altar. For they offered them before the Lord, and they became holy. Thus they shall be a sign to the people of Israel. So Eleazar the priest took the bronze censers which those who were burned had offered, and they hammered out as a covering for the altar to be a reminder to the people of Israel, so that no outsider who is not of the descendants of Aharon should draw near to burn incense before the Lord, lest he become like Korah and his company, as the Lord had said to him through Moshe. But on the next day, all the congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moshe and against Aharon, saying, You have killed the people of the Lord. And when the congregation had assembled against Moshe and against Aharon, they turned toward the tent of meeting, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. And Moshe and Aharon came to the tent, at the front of the tent of meeting. And the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, Get away from the midst of this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. And they fell on their faces. And Moshe said to Aharon, Take your censer, and put fire on it from the altar, and lay incense on it, and carry it quickly to the congregation to make atonement for them. For wrath has gone out from the Lord. The plague has begun. So Aharon took it, as Moshe said, and ran into the midst of the assembly. And behold, the plague had already begun among the people. And he put on the incense and made atonement for the people. And he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stopped. Now those who died in the plague were 14,700, beside those who died in the affair of Korah. And Aharon returned to Moshe at the entrance of the tent of meeting when the plague was stopped. The Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, Speak to the people of Israel, and get from them staffs, one for each father's house, from all their chiefs according to their father's houses, 12 staffs. Write each man's name on his staff, and write Aharon's name on the staff of Levi. For there shall be one staff for the head of each father's house. Then you shall deposit them in the tent of meeting before the testimony, where I meet with you. And the staff of the man whom I choose shall sprout. Thus I will make to cease from me the grumblings of the people of Israel, which they grumble against you. Moshe spoke to the people of Israel, And all their chiefs gave him staffs, one for each chief, according to their father's houses, 12 staffs. And the staff of Aharon was among their staffs. Moshe deposited the staffs before the Lord in the tent of the testimony. On the next day, Moshe went into the tent of the testimony, and behold, the staff of Aharon for the house of Levi had sprouted and put forth buds and produced blossoms, and it bore ripe almonds. Then Moshe brought out all the staffs from before the Lord to all the people of Israel, and they looked, and each man took his staff. And the Lord said to Moshe, put back the staff of Aharon before the testimony, to be kept as a sign for the rebels, that you may make an end of their grumblings against me, lest they die. Thus did Moshe as the Lord commanded him, so he did. And the people of Israel said to Moshe, behold, we perish, we are undone, we are all undone. Everyone who comes near to the tabernacle of the Lord shall die. Are we all to perish?
Couple of subject matters. Any idea, any thoughts, any input from anybody? Nobody has any feedback? Okay, I got one down here.
When I was reading it in chapter 16, verse 9 through 10, what I had wrote in the side notes is the comment that I remind myself constantly of, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
All right.
And then also in 14, I had commented it wasn't Moshe that said not to enter, it was Yahweh. They're blaming the wrong person.
Mm-hmm. Comment just about like the sinkholes that have been happening in the last few years or however long they've been happening. I was reminded of the ground opening and then being solid. I think about like, how could that happen? It's just one house and then, I don't know. Who is in the house?
I was in the house. I mean, that in Hebrew, that means the family, the whole household.
I know, but the sinkholes that really do happen.
Oh.
I was thinking about that. I always think of this portion of scripture when I hear about a sinkhole. I'm like,
well, he didn't say it was an earthquake. He just opened it up, didn't he? Maybe he didn't say earthquake. Opens up and down and go. I mean, we're in a wilderness area. There's no water. Down and go. And it closed up that fast. Yes.
The supernatural of that is not that it opened up, because like she said, there are sinkholes that happen.
Yeah.
The supernatural of that is that it closed right back up again, and there was no evidence of...
No evidence. They're all gone. So what do you see God's action here is? What is it all about? Pat?
It's about rebelling against God's established authority, and he put Moses in charge and Aaron, and they rebelled against it. And they were rebelling against God when they rebelled against that authority.
Yeah.
And they were given a chance. They were not, you know, he didn't do that instantly. They were given the opportunity to get themselves right with God, and they chose not to.
It says, we're not going. Yes.
God doesn't like complainers.
James has a question.
It kind of seemed to me that it was to end the grumbling, that, you know.
It seems that was the conclusion.
Right, yeah.
The 17th chapter seems to say this comes to the end now.
So
shut your mouth, in a sense. All right, so we go through this thing. I'm going to pick both chapters because they're not that hard to really understand, except there's two separate occasions taking place here. One was challenging the first one here. Was challenging the priesthood. You know, and we've gone through this before. Now, remember, they were in the land of wilderness of Paran, and then when they went in the promised land, remember the 12? And they came back out again, and bad news was given to them. Well, and God killed 10 of those because they gave bad report. And then, of course, some brave people decided to do, well, we'll go in there anyway. And they were told not to go. And they went. And guess what? They got killed. We're going. When God says no, it is a no. When God says move, you better move. You say, I'm staying. Well, chapter 14 is, okay, you're going to stay there? Down you go. Okay, they're staying. They're not going anywhere. you know, in a funny sense, but you don't challenge this part. And you have to keep in mind how some, by this time, most, this is in the third year, or beginning of heading into the third year, they were supposed to enter into the promised land. We've been following so far up to this point, and they were approaching to going into the Holy Land, and lo and behold, the promised land, and carry out what God wanted them to do. And lo and behold, we have now this opening statement of something was taking place in some place in during the wilderness. Now, they already were refused. They couldn't go in, and they had to leave the point where they were at in Paran, and God started heading them toward, and said, take them toward the Red Sea, and then move them north. So they were probably already on the, the eastern side of the Red Sea, and heading north all the way up where the Dead Sea is at, and up to the other lake. So we're at here. Now, we find here the first one that's mentioned is Korah. I know that many of you look in your Psalms and you say, these songs are from the sons of Korah. And a lot of those songs seem to aim at the Messiah himself. When you really study those book of Psalms and the writings of the sons of Korah. Not all of them, but some of them seem to hit that point. So we have a picture that not all of Korah's children were killed. We don't have that clarified in this chapter, but when you go into book of Psalms, somebody survived. Or a group of people survived. Maybe the young sons survived. We don't know. And so Korah is the very first one that's mentioned. Then the second one is, of course, Dathan and Abiram, which are of the tribe of Reuben. So we have the Levitical and the Reuben. Now, you remember what Korah was responsible for? Well, let's go here real quickly. In Numbers, you write this down, you have to go there. Numbers, the third chapter. This is the duties of the Levitical, not the priesthood, the Levitical section of one of the sons of Levi. And it's in chapter 3, verse 31. Their duty, referring to Korah, included the ark, the table, meaning the showbread, the lampstand, the altars, the utensils of the sanctuary, with all there and all that was ministered, and the screen, or that's the opening of the screen, the veil, and all the working related to them. Everything to do with the Holy of Holies, we call it. And everything to do with the sacrifices of not only the incense burner, but also of the other altar as well, of the one that they did animal sacrifice. And Ezra, the son of Aaron, the priest, was to be chief over the leaders of the Levites, all the Levites, not just this tribe, but all of them. So he was to be the one. And the oversight of those who keep charge of the sanctuary. So Eleazar was in charge. So we have here, we're going on this story here, where Korah was challenging the authority, or the, should put it this way, what God had appointed Aaron and his sons to become high priest. Aaron members only one member of the Levitical priesthood, a Levitical tribe, rather. But only the tribe of Aaron, or the family of Aaron, were to become high priest. Nobody else from any other. No other Levite could do it. Nobody else could do it. It was only of that family. And so we have here, he comes down in verse 2. It's very interesting because we're going to look at this carefully. And they rose up before Moses and the certain of the leaders of Israel, and calls 250. And they assembled remember the congregation. What's the Hebrew word they use the word congregation? What is it? Achad. The tabernacle of Achad. Now, what does Achad mean? Appointment. So every time when you were called to the tabernacle of Achad,
You there? Not Ohad. What did I say? Moed. Tabernacle of Moed. That means God is calling you and he's going to give you an appointment. He's going to give you a sign or he's going to talk with you. God did not come out of the Holy of Holies and go amongst the people and say, I'm going to go over there and I'm going to talk to so-and-so. No. He's calling them to make an appointment with him. And so they come back, they come to the place where he is at. Remember what happened? The tabernacle of the Lord was separate from, and not connected inside of the camp, separate from the camp, because they had transgressed before. Now we're on the move. Now it's a different situation. When you travel, now each tribe had to be in a certain location to get out and travel with that tabernacle. Here we're at this point here. This particular Cohen, that family, had a very special job to do. None of the other tribes of Levite had that job. These are the ones that had to carry all of that which was in the Holy of Holies and in the tabernacle. The ark and all that. They didn't get a horse and buggy and a deuce and a half or, you know, SUV to move anything. They had to walk with it. They had to carry with it. And remember, these men were not couch potato people. They were strong and healthy and well-built men. They weren't skinny guys, barely making it through. They didn't overwork their texting thing, you know, with their thumbs. They actually had muscles and might and strength. So that kind of picture that what they were like. Now, it mentions these 250,000. Let's drop down real quick now to verse 17. I want to show you something. And sometimes it's really hard to looking at the text and say, well, that's an awful lot. Well, it actually is an awful lot to a certain group. And he says, now take the men, verse 17, and the censors. Now, the tribe of Reuben wasn't given censors. Tribe of Levi wasn't given censors. Any other tribe given censors. Now, what had to be done? What is a censor for? What does a censor do?
Fire.
What?
Fire.
What was the main purpose of it? What? To cause smoke. How often do you cause smoke? Every single day? So every time you approach, I have to go before God. How often was a high priest ever supposed to enter into the Holy of Holies?
Once a year.
Once a year. And so that golden altar, that's where that incense was stored, on that golden altar. It wasn't stored in somebody's backyard or somebody's hip pocket. It was stored right there.
But how did 12 men
get a censor? How many? 250. That's an awful lot. Now, those censors were later on destroyed. Never be used again. Okay? So, how many of them and what family were they of? That had that golden, that incense. How many of them were there? Were all of them the priesthood, the Levites? All right. We read all the time. Remember the time we went through that very, very boring thing of the 12 tribes for 12 days? And there's certain things they had to give, and for four different reasons for the giving of them. And sometimes you read it and forget what it was all about. But they all had to have those, they had to come and have certain number of incense, the spoons, the thing that holds the iron. And that was given to the priesthood. Now sometimes we don't think priesthood really is very big. We don't know exactly how many there were. Yes. Oh. So we're looking at saying it's kind of funny how this is worded. I don't have the answer to everything. I find it very fascinating that all these men had to tell, and God said, bring them up there, and then I'll tell you what I'm going to do with it. And so, whether they are of the tribes of Levi, or of the house of, since it's the
house of Korah, not him, but his father's house, were the ones who probably had to, what were their responsibilities? Remember what it was? What were they in charge of? All of the utensils and everything to do with it. Now, I don't have an answer for you as why God wanted so many of them. I don't. And it doesn't matter. I don't have to know everything. I'll have to know what the incident's about. And so we have here this incredible number. And they went against God. And what was the purpose? What did Moses say why they were doing it? They wanted to become the priesthood. They didn't like the appointment. At least Korah and his group didn't like the appointment that God chose. And so they didn't see God appointing anybody because God didn't come out and appoint publicly. By the way, all you people out there, this is what I'm saying. You know, I'm going to appoint Aaron here. Oh, you got that? And over here, I'm going to appoint Moses. You got that? No, he didn't do that. How did he appoint them? Moses. He spoke to Moses. And then Moses said to the congregation and to Aaron, now you are. We went through a chapter how the family, Moses and Aaron and his four sons had to go through a cleansing process for 7 weeks. You remember that? The whole congregation saw that. They're very much aware of it. But all they heard was what Moses commanded. They didn't hear the word of the Lord coming down and yelling. When was the last time they heard the word of the Lord? When?
Sinai.
Mount Sinai. And they were overjoyed and happy and wonderful and praising God for it. Right? They were so terrified, frightened, they couldn't even open their mouths to say anything. They were so scared. Terror. They were terrorized by the voice of God. They couldn't talk back. You know, a parent could do that to a child by fierceness and volume alone against a child. And the child becomes so terrified, it doesn't even have a chance to think. It's all waiting for the thing. He's going to hit me. He's going to kill me. That's all they go. The mind will go to that point, and that's what they thought. He's going to kill us all. Don't want to talk to him. Because that's how powerful the Word of God is. So all they had from that point on is nothing but Moses. Even God spoke to Aaron and spoke to Miriam. We found that out. But not in the very same way he speaks to Moses. How did he speak to Moses?
Face to face.
Face to face. No parable, no mysteries, no having any kind of different word. He knows everything I'm thinking. And said, I speak, but to you, I'm going to speak to you in mysteries, in a dream, or in a vision, or in parables, and you won't figure it out. Not with Moses. So what we're having here is a challenge of, in a sense, the appointments of God. Right? We already know the 12 tribes. Who were the leaders of the 12 tribes? We read that in previous chapters. And God named each and every one of them. Moses didn't name them. God said, Moses, this man and his name and his father's name and what tribe he is from is the charge of Ephraim. This man and his father's name and his grandfather's name, this man is in charge of Dan. And God chose all those names. Moses didn't pick them out of the cloud. Now, what part of Scripture does Moses pick? Do you remember? God told Moses to pick the 70 elders. Remember that? What's known now as the Sanhedrin. He was the one that picked them. God says, pick out righteous men. So Moses did that part. But only because God gave him a command to do so. And what kind of a person? Not anybody under the sun. Just certain people. Now, we have the names of those, but we didn't go through those in detail. So we're looking here, and we're finding that What was Moses' response? Verse 3, it says, and of chapter 16, and they gathered together and spoke against Moses and Aaron, and they said, he said, you take too much on yourself, seeing that the congregation, the Moed, is holy, every one of them, and Yahuwah is among them. Therefore, then, lift up yourself above the Moed. They accused Moses of doing that. That is, Korah. The first one we have here is Korah being dealt with. Later on, we have the sons of Reuben dealt with later. Now, he's going to challenge these two guys, this group of people. And he says, now, tomorrow, I want you to do something. Korah, and unto all those that were with him, how many were with him? There were 250 men of renown, well-known, well-respected, everybody knew who they were. They weren't just a bunch of flakes. They were well-known and honored, respected as leaders. Here we go now. And he says, now you want to take all your censors, Korah, and all his company, as they did, and they came tomorrow, and the next day they came, and what happened? What happened? Verse 10. And he, God, hath brought thee near unto him. Brought. It's a really bad word here. He, God, hath brought you to his Moed, his tent. They answered. The Korah people answered and went to that location where God's tent was, should we say, God's appointment was, where his dwelling was. Because tabernacle means the dwelling place where you live. And so they are, and they went there, and what happened to them? Well, now it's kind of like all of a sudden the subject matter changes, right? All of a sudden now another issue shows up. But not really. It's not necessarily in exact order. Now this one here in verse 12 is challenging whom? See, God called for Korah, and those other 250 to come to the Moed, the meeting place. Now also God called these two brothers or two sons to the Moed, the meeting place. And they said they're not going to go. And guess what happened? And he says, and they're accusing Moses, of course. Why? Because they felt God, that since they didn't know that God verbally said to them on the mountain that Moses is in charge, however, who led them out? Moses. Who led them through the whole thing? Moses. Oh, for 3 years did Moses, was Moses leading and guiding them, and every time the cloud moved, they moved. They kind of had an idea complete, but they didn't like the way, quote, Moses was running the show. And what did they want to do? And funny thing about it, they wanted to go back in the promised land. They already had evidence that people of the tribe were dead. How ignorant can you be? But they felt they were more wise. This is what you call pride of life is really strong here. It's one of those pride of life things that once sometimes we don't like to admit, but we all do have. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and pride of life. The last one is the strongest of the bunch. It has more power over you than anything else. Your pride. Now we come up here, and what do? They accused him of him not doing his job. And they're going to point themselves their own. And they're going to go there. And Moses says, oops, what did he say to them? No, he addressed God. You see this? He turned and he addressed God. And he says, don't respect them. Don't honor them. I know it says don't take their offering. But when God turns down an offering, it's because not the offering was bad, but because the pride and the life and the thinking and how they're going to act is, and God will not accept the offering. Remember Cain? He says, sin is at your door. Why don't you close it? You can have power over it. You can rule over it. You're going to handle it. Now we think it's Abel never, ever had to sin. No, he also had to do. He also had to overcome. He also had to fight like everybody else has a fight. But we don't know much about him. Why? Because that's not what God wants us to see. He wants to see the action of Cain so we would know and understand how God looks at us. Not how God looks at the other guy, the other person, but to us. And he will banish us. When you look at Cain and all the house of Israel, guess what God did? Banished them. Oh, wait a minute. Like he did Cain, yeah. What happened to all the families of Israel? They're scattered all over the place, wandering here, wandering there, and no land. They didn't have their own country. Like Cain is probably a prophecy in the sense of the house of Israel. Because it happened to the house of Israel as it happened to Cain. And if anybody kills Cain, guess what? God's going to come against them. So anybody kills anybody from the house of Israel, scattered them out that, God's going to be mad at the person. He's going to do his job against him. So here we see that don't respect anything that he gives. Don't take it. For I haven't taken anything, God. I haven't hurt them at all. Then, now he's speaking back to Korah. And these people refused to come. It doesn't say that Moses went to their tent, knocked on their tent door. He just said, God has called you to his moed, his appointment, for his tent is that, his dwelling place is that. And they said they weren't going to come. So we've got messengers sending back and forth, basically, is what it boils down to. Now back here in verse 16, now we're back onto Korah again. So remember Korah was at the tent? Now we're back to the story of Korah. So we're seeing two different events taking place here. One is away from Moed, and one's in front of Moed. If you understand what I'm saying so far. And now, those standing in front of it, what do you say? You take every man and his censer and put his incense into it and bring it before Yahweh, every man his censer, to 150 censers. And also Aaron, each of you, his censers. So here is the family of Aaron, and they had have their incense as well. All of them were burning. They're going to go before the Lord, and they're going to do this. And they took it before the tabernacle of the Moed with Moses and Aaron. And Korah gathered the congregation, those men that were with Korah, unto the door of the tabernacle. And the glory of the Lord showed up. Remember I talked last week about glory? And sometimes we think glory just means a wonderful, beautiful, gorgeous thing. Glory means not only that, it also means power, might, strength. You will see the Son of God coming in his glory. Now, when we think about the Son of God coming in his glory, he's going to come in his glory being nice and beautiful and handsome and gentle and sweet. He's got a sword in his hand. And he's going to use it. And the glory of the Lord does not mean just something that's beautiful. It means power. You know the sun has a glory? You know what happens if it gets too hot? You suffer. What happens if it gets too cold? You suffer. But it's still a glorious sun. Yeah, yeah, but, you know, it can go, well, God can make do one thing. He can make it stop, right? Or make the earth stop. He can bring the earth closer or farther away from it. He can do anything he wants to. And so the power of all these things is amazing. Even the power of the moon. What does the glory of the moon do? Tides! If it wasn't for tides, the water would still flood. So he crops and stops the water from going so far. And remember, he says, you go this far, no farther. He uses the moon to draw the water up. And then use the moon for it to draw back down again. Water, you can't go anywhere until I tell you where to go. And my moon's in charge of that, in a sense. We think God doesn't need those things. Well, he created them for his use, right? He created them for his purpose and for his glory. So now it says here that the glory, where was that verse? What was that? Let's see. I forgot what verse I was on. What verse? 19. Oh, yeah. And the glory of Yahweh appeared unto the congregation, that is those 100 of the 250, appeared before them. What happened? Then Yahweh said to Moses and to Aaron, saying, separate yourself from this group. And guess what? They died? Yeah. Wow. And then we go back now and it says one more thing that Yahweh spoke to Moses saying, okay, listen, I want you to get to the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Now Moses goes there. He now leaves where he was at. He goes over to these two tents where those families are at. And guess what took place? And Moses, just Moses, rose up and went to Dathan and Abiram. And the elders of Israel followed him. Remember the elders of Israel were 12? All 12 of them? We haven't so far found any of them being killed yet. The elders that God appointed by name in earlier chapters. Now he comes here. And of course, we know what the story is. He told them to separate. You people, separate from these two tents, these two families, these two houses. And then, so we didn't know that God said this. Because it looked like he didn't say it. But here Moses says something that's very, very interesting. Verse 29, if these men died a common death of all, like all men do, or if they visitation, like a lot of people do, men do, then guess what? God is not with Moses. So here's the challenge that took place. These two guys were challenging Moses. You know, Moses had more authority than Aaron. Remember? So these two guys would want to have authority even over Korah. Because Moses had authority over them. I will have authority. They will say, we will have authority over the whole priesthood and all the Levites. We'll tell them what to do, like Moses is telling everybody else what to do. We'll do it ourselves. And then what happened? But Yahweh make a new thing, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up with all of the with them, all their belongings. Then they go down quickly, not slowly, not like a sinkhole that slowly goes, or what calls that other one? Quicksand. Slowly goes down. You fight, not trying to go down. And it's quick, fast, sudden. I think it's very funny to myself that this is the power of the earth. And so God commanded the earth, open up. Keep that in mind. Remember in Revelations, where the fire, the dragon flushes out this water to drown the woman. What did the earth do? Open it up. That was the end of it. Right? So we see a pattern here. It's not new. What written in Revelation, you can see it in the past. You know how God works. And the earth opened up, verse 23, opened up and swallowed them and their houses and all their belongings, and all the men that were, all those appeared with them, and unto Korah and to all their goods. So down they went. That was the end of them. And of course, what did the 12 elders realize? Let's flee from this place. We're all going to die. Fear. Again, now God has to use fear. And if he sees that God will use fear on us as well. He used fear upon us so we would respond. He doesn't use fear out of hatred, resentment. He uses fear for response. And then guess what you're going to do? You're going to flee from the place that you were once there. And now God says, you did what I want you to do. Good. Now let's go on. Now let's continue on here. It's a very interesting part. And then fire, remember Korah was dead now. Now, verse 35, we have what? Then came a fire from Yahweh and consumed 250 men with their that offered incense. 250. Fire consumed them. Now, sometimes we think of fire like turns into ashes. Not so. You remember Aaron's two sons killed by fire? They weren't killed, and then they didn't have to shovel up the ashes. They had to carry the bodies out. So when God comes like fire, doesn't mean he's going to burn things up like ashes. He's just going to take the life as fast as fire can take life. Fire is a representation of power. Fire can take life quick and fast. And the same thing here. These people had to be saved. I mean, the ladle, the bowl had to be saved, right? So that didn't get burnt up. So fire wasn't the sense that we think it has to be so hot that it turns everything to ashes. They have to bury them. And then he said to speak to Aaron, to Eleazar, what to do with those censers. Since they have been used in, in resentment or rebellion or pride, they couldn't be used what they first were designed for anymore. All of them had been melted down. What happened to it? They made a covering on top of the altar. That is the one they give animal sacrifice to. Now, it didn't have that in the very beginning. Now there's a cover. It covers that tabernacle. It covers the offering made by fire we have animal sacrifices there. But, verse 41, but on the morrow, all the congregation of Israel, oh dear, what they do? Murmured again. After all that! Oh, wow, you think finally get the message, right? Well, we would, because we have great, wonderful, beautiful hindsight. That's why we are so wise today. Because we read what took place, as Apostle Paul said, for our admonition, for our correction, for our understanding, if it's written there for us to know. And this reason why we got what we call insight, our insight comes from God's hindsight. Oh, that's how he operates. Oh, he did back then. Same yesterday and today. Okay, I got insight. As he did before, he could do it again. Now we got insight, right? So we have to be careful. We think someone's got insight. Well, if you have to have it come from God. It doesn't come from any place else. Yes.
Would that be the 11th murmur?
No, the 11th, 10th murmur already had ended, and they're going to be dead. Yeah, this is a different murmur. They didn't learn the lesson. They didn't learn the lesson. They're going to murmur for 40 years, by the way. Murmuring doesn't stop just because, oh, he just numbered 10. No, that's his limit. But not people. I mean, how many times have you heard somebody murmur? Complain about the thing over and over and over and over and over again? They don't. God, I'm not going to hear them anymore. He just wipes them out. Refuses to respond to it. Refuses to even acknowledge even their requests. He will not acknowledge after a limited period of time murmuring against him. That's a lesson for us to know and to give honor and respect to God and don't take him for granted. Oh, he's loving God. He'll always do this to me. No.
He's going to say, look, this is my limit. The Ten Commandments is my limit. Tithe is my limit. Period. All right? And now we come into this point of, oh, another murmuring coming up. People will continue on murmuring. And God takes their lives to frighten them, to scare them. And when he takes the lives of these people, renowned, 250 well-known, well-understood, well-respected leaders are now dead. Why? This is what happens when God takes away a leader that everybody respects. And all of a sudden, you're realizing that God's looking right at you. What are you going to do now? So we find this interesting thing. And we'll go on to this. We're almost finished here. And because that leaveth murmuring you're talking about, guess what took place? And a very fascinating thing took place. What stopped the dying? She's going to answer. She's going to answer it.
Moshe commanded Aharon to run into the plague with the censer to stop it. He said, we have to make atonement. And he ran into that plague and it stopped.
Now, tell me if that's not an image of the Son of God. Did the Son of God run into death to save our lives? This is a picture of what the Messiah does. Now we have great offering, great things, great thankfulness. And it's an awesome thing when you look and say, wow, he really did stop death. Moses couldn't run in there and stop it. Was it Moses' job? Nor was it Eleazar's job. It was Aaron's responsibility. Aaron didn't say, but. No, he just ran and did it. They saved their lives. Talk about doing this on the spur of the moment, you might say. We don't know how long this death took place. We don't know how, like it was 5 seconds or 5 days. We don't know. It doesn't tell you that. It's unimportant. But it says, all that died in that plague were 14,700. Oh, really? Oh. So we should take note. Real quick on the 17th chapter, real quick. It's related to the first one because he wanted to stop this murmuring. All right. What did he have them do? 17th chapter. What? Now, yes, it took all the steps. All men had to write their name on the rod. Aaron had to write his name on the rod. So each one of these 12 men that were mentioned earlier in Numbers, they all had to write their name on the rod. Now, rod is not a cane you walk with. A rod is a rod. It's a stick. It's a prodding thing. Prods things. Like, you want to prod a sheep, prod a goat, you know, hit it, and they move. And it's not super long because his rod was put into the ark. The ark was not very long, very short. And so it's put inside that one. So don't think a big, huge walking cane. A cane is one thing. A rod is a different thing. He says, thy rod and thy staff comfort me. So there's two different things God uses. He uses the rod, number one, first. Then the staff, secondly. Staff gives you support. Rod disciplines you. All right? Simple. Right? We got that. And of course, what took place with Ron, with his rod? Yes.
I read.
What? On the ball.
Well, he put all the rods up against the wall. That's what Yahuwah told him to do. And then Aaron's rod budded to show that he's the leader and not everybody else.
Now ask yourself a question. Why? Why all rods were dead wood? Why was this rod brought back to life? Put it in that terminology. I'm sorry, what? When that rod came back to life, what did it do?
Save the rest of the people.
First it did was bud. The second thing it did is brought forth more buds. Second thing, blossoms came. And it yielded almonds. What is the golden, what is the menorah made up with? What's the lighting that's behind? Almond blossoms. Now we have to add this thing all up together. Now it may seem, oh, it's a miracle. A wonderful miracle. No, this is the power of God bringing something that is dead, bringing it back to life, and look what it's going to do. It's going to bud, be resurrected up, and it's going to bring forth mud buds, more resurrection. And it's going to come through, it's going to blossom, become, it's going to produce, and guess what's going to produce? Fruit. In this case, almonds. Is this a fictitious story or a story that looks like kids don't understand? No, you explain to them that it represents the rod. Now, that means the Messiah himself, quote, is a rod of God. Paraphrasing that phrase. The Son of God is the rod. And what is the high priest supposed to do? You remember what was told what the high priest supposed to do? Two things. Tell him what is clean. Tell him what is unclean. And tell him how to get the unclean to clean. Second thing you're supposed to do is tell them what is holy and what is unholy. You cannot change that which is unholy into holiness. It's gone. It doesn't exist. It's forever gone. And the Son of God teaches you and me. Yes, we can say, okay, what pig is clean, what pig is unclean. No, what is what? Unclean and what is clean. And he tells us then, the Son of God tells us how to clean it up. Whether it's our house, quote, our dwelling place, quote, our clothing, quote, or basically our life, inside and outside. There's a reason why the house, remember, read, why would you have to anoint the house that's got mold on it? Talking about not the physical house, but your house. You yourself. Clean up the inside. Clean it all up. God, the high priest, is the only one that gets to announce whether it's clean or unclean. No king, no general, no leader. Only the high priest says clean or unclean. Now that's a picture of the Messiah. How he handles things. And now we have another picture here. Hopefully we can understand a little bit more about that rod. Because after he has done his job, and what it says, the scripture, God chastens, chastises, corrects those that he loves. So every time you are chastised or chastened, sometimes you think the devil did it to you. More and more scripture from Genesis all the way to Revelation seems to be God. Or an angel sent by God to do it. Never seems to be. The devil has to have permission to do anything he wants to do. The book of Job tells you he can't do anything unless he's given permission to do so. He had to follow the same rules and regulations that everybody else did. Otherwise, his light goes out. All right. In verse 10, it's very fascinating. And he says, now say, Yahweh say unto Moses, and just bring Aaron's rod again before the testimony. That is, what's the testimony? Where is the testimony? Where specific place? In the ark. And the testimony against. Testimony against. But what covers that testimony? The mercy seat. Now that rod is put inside of and along with the condemnation, the judgment. Wow. Gives you something to think about, doesn't it? And thou shalt quit. Take away their murmuring from me, lest they die. Now that rod is a message for us today. That rod that was dead, now alive, it budded, came back to life. It brought forth more buds, more lives. And then it blossomed. And when you blossom, it means it's got a seed inside of it. The seed inside of it is the almond. It's the final fruit of it. Now, that's in the under, put it this way, under the mercy seat. And God said, now that rod has a different meaning, doesn't it? Thy rod and thy staff comfort me. David wasn't talking about some stick in someone's hand. He knew and understood what Aaron's rod meant and what it was for, and that one is to comfort him. And for what? To always teach him and cry. How often did David come and cry before God? Probably more than any other king written. Not to make him a weakling, doesn't make him a fool, doesn't make him a softy. He's a very strong and powerful king. But he was humble. That's all. And so we see something that we need to look back and say, what are we going to do about this in our lives? Yes, it's a physically took place, but everything God does is to teach us about him. From Genesis, all of the revelations, it's all about the creator of heaven and earth. Every incident is about him. There's not an exception to the rule. Yes, people are involved, but he's the one that teaches the people, educates the people. He's also the one that's teaching you and educating you. Nobody else is.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hillel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hillel.info. That's H-A-L-L-E-L.info. Hillel.info.